This meeting of the Stanislaus County Board of Supervisors will now come to order. Please rise for a salute to our nation's flag. We will begin our meeting this morning with a presentation proclaiming November 2009 as Adoption and Permanency Awareness Month. Morning, Jan.
Good morning. Morning, Supervisor DeMartini and other members of the board, Mr. Robinson, Mr. Doring. My name is Jan Viss, and I'm an Assistant Director with the Community Services Agency, Child and Family Services Division. And with me this morning is Virginia, who will be sharing in a little while. We are here today to celebrate November 2009 as Adoption and Permanency Awareness Month. On any given day in the United States, there are just under 500,000 children in foster care. Of these children, almost 130,000 are waiting to be adopted. These are boys and girls of all ages and races. They all desire the same thing, a permanent family of their own. When a child enters the child welfare system, the first goal is to reunify them with their parents if the safety and risk factors that warranted the removal can be resolved. When that is not possible, adoption is the next best plan that we can offer these children and youth as it allows them a permanent loving home. At a local level, Stanislaus County does its part to increase permanency for children. Within the Community Services Agency, Child and Family Services Division, there is a licensed adoption agency. This past fiscal year, we completed 69 adoptions. This year, we will also be celebrating 60 years as a licensed adoption agency. The California Systems Improvement Project measures and monitors each county's performance in ensuring the safety, permanency, and well-being of children. One of the outcomes by which we are measured is the percentage of children who are adopted within 24 months after entering into foster care. These are children who entered foster care due to abuse and neglect, and the parents were not able to successfully reunify with their children. As you can see, we exceed both the state and national standards for timely adoption. In Stanislaus County, 55.7% of the children with this permanent plan are adopted within 24 months. The statewide average is 30%, and the national standard is 36.6%. In Stanislaus County, there are several licensed nonprofit adoption agencies. These agencies provide a variety of adoption services for children in the child welfare system, for birth parents who make a plan of adoption for their infant child, and also international adoptions. Please stand as your agency is named. Aspiranet Foster and Adoption Services, Bethany Christian Services, Family Connections Christian Adoptions, Families First, Konania Family Services, Sierra Vista Child and Family Services, and then the Community Services Agency. And we'd like to thank these folks for the work they do in our community. Adoptions and Permanency Month is also celebrating the children who are able to be successfully reunified with their parents after initial removal from the juvenile court. These parents successfully completed a court-ordered case plan and were able to provide a safe environment so that their families could be reunited. This is the first form of permanency we hope to achieve for a child in the child welfare system. Last year, 113 children were safely reunified with their parents in Stanislaus County. And we'd also like to thank the staff that provide this valuable service. And if you're in the audience, would you please stand? This next slide provides us with a quick snapshot of what happened 2 years from the time a child was made a dependent of the court. Out of the 207 children that were removed in fiscal year 2006-2007, you'll see that 47.8% were reunified with their parents, 30.4% had a plan of adoption, 14.5 entered long-term foster care. 5.8 had a legal guardianship, which is also a permanent plan, and 1.5% were either incarcerated or moved into the juvenile probation system. And one of the things that's important to note is the percentage of youth that are in long-term foster care. That means that a permanent plan has not been identified them from a legal perspective. Some are living with relatives who provide permanency, but many are in foster care waiting for a permanent plan. Virginia will now share her story of reunification.
Good morning. I have been asked to share today on my reunification journey through Child Welfare Services, Families in Partnership, and Safe Court. I am a success story. My children achieved permanency with me. I was referred to them in regards to long-term substance abuse, traumatic domestic violence, homelessness, and a dysfunctional family system. The moment that my youngest daughter, Mia, was taken out of my arms by the Sheriff's Department and Child Welfare Services is the moment that broke me as a woman. That was the day that I decided to change. The seed was planted. I chose to do whatever it took to get my children back. I had lost my oldest daughter, Alina, through family court, and my mother had obtained guardianship of her. I lived at First Step Residential for 6 months and Laura's house for 5 months. After completing both programs, I received a family reunification voucher through FIP and Section 8. In February, I moved into the first place of my own. In March, I was able to get custody of my oldest daughter, and she has been with me ever since. I also began working full-time and am still employed. In April, I graduated from Safe Court, and in June, I received full sole and legal custody of my youngest daughter from Juvenile Dependency Court. I plan on returning to school full-time to receive my bachelor's degree in business, as I have already obtained my associate's degree. One of my biggest barriers throughout this journey was my shame and guilt over the bad choices that I had made in the past in regards to my children. Today I have come to terms with that shame and guilt, and I have chosen to stay in the solution. I strive to be the mother that I never had. I slowly began to forgive everyone who ever hurt me so that I could move on. Most importantly, I forgave myself. Today I am grateful to all the people who helped me so much through this whole process, including First Step, The Haven, Laura's House, Families in Partnership, and Safe Court. I needed people to tell me what was good for me because I had been trapped in a cycle that had killed my spirit and scarred my well-being so much. I am blessed that my children have been reunified with me. In my care, my children are thriving in spite of the challenges that I have faced. Words could never express the gratitude I have to the people who showed me that I was worthy of my children's love, and that regardless of the mistakes I had made, my children deserved me. It is so important for me that I never forget what I have been subjected to, so that I remain strong for my children. The places that I have been, the things that I have done, and the people who have hurt my heart will forever be imprints in my memory of what I don't want my children to have to endure. This year, I will be having my very first Christmas with both my children in our very own place. This is our permanency story. To all who are part of giving me this opportunity to share, thank you.
Thank you, Virginia. Thank you for your support. The Honorable Linda McFadden, presiding judge of the Juvenile Court, will now accept the resolution proclaiming November 2009 as Adoption and Permanency Awareness Month in Stanislaus County.
Well, hi, Linda. I've seen you there for a while. I try and stay out of court as often as possible, so. So I have a resolution today from the board, you know, recognizing the work that the county does for adopting the children out. I have a special interest in this because I began my life in foster care and was adopted myself 39 years ago. Yeah. Yeah. So anyway, I won't read the whole thing, but the resolution recognizes the essential value of adoption and all the work that the county and private organizations do. And I'll read the last line. It says, therefore, be it resolved that the Stanislaus County Board of Supervisors does hereby unanimously proclaim November 2009 as Adoption and Permanency Awareness Month in Stanislaus County. And let me present that to you.
Thank you. Yes, thank you, Supervisors, for recognizing the importance of adoption, children, and our families in this community. And thank you to all the agencies and this community who work together to provide families for our children and to keep the families together. I had a young lady in court yesterday. She's both a dependent and a delinquent ward of this court. And I asked her why she kept running away from placement and what I could do as a judge, what we could do as a community to try to help her, to keep her from running away. And she told me all she wanted was a family. That is the importance of families and keeping them together and finding families for our children. And if we can do that, we can have a much better community. So thank you all for your work and your efforts in this regard. And thank you, Supervisor.
You good?
Thank you, Ben.
On the Central Valley Flood Management Planning Program. Mr. Ken Kirby?
Yes. Good morning, Supervisors. Thank you for giving me time to speak with you today. So my name is Ken Kirby. I serve as an executive advisor to the California Department of Water Resources and their Flood Safe Initiative. I also have with me today Veronica Rodriguez with the Ogilvie Public Relations and Brian Green, her colleague. I want to share with you just a little bit of overview about the Flood Safe California Initiative. I'd like to talk to you a little bit about the Central Valley Flood Protection Plan. I want to give you a heads up about some new requirements that were passed in 2007 related to local land use planning and flood management and flood protection. And we have time for questions as well. So the Flood Safe California Initiative is a statewide effort that DWR began in 2007. It's a multi-agency effort with four major activities. DWR is providing leadership and working closely with the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers, with the Central Valley Flood Protection Board, with FEMA, and all of our local flood protection providers throughout the state. We're focusing on improving emergency response, improving flood management systems throughout California, improving operation and maintenance, and informing and assisting the public related to flood risk and flood management. This is a long-term effort that DWR believes is important to continue well into the future. We're working on phase one that's funded primarily through Propositions 84 and 1E. Those voter-approved initiatives in 2006 provided about $4.9 billion to improve integrated flood management throughout California, and those funds are available between 2007 and 2017. FloodSafe goals include five goals. The first one is to reduce chance of flooding, or as I like to say, reduce the likelihood of getting wet when you don't want to, because some of our colleagues recognize that there are important benefits of periodic flooding in certain areas. We also have goal number two is to reduce the consequences of flooding, to acknowledge that no matter how much we invest in California, floods will still occur, and we need to recognize that and be prepared for it. The third goal is to sustain economic growth, recognizing that public investments in improving flood management and flood protection is essentially to provide public safety and a stable environment for economic prosperity. The fourth one is to protect and enhance ecosystems, recognizing that much of the ecosystem throughout California is closely connected to riverine habitat and also to tidal areas. And the fifth one is to promote sustainability, where we're talking about sustainability from three aspects: the social, economic, and environmental. That was a very, very quick overview of the Flood Safe California Initiative. I'd be happy to answer more questions if you'd like. The Central Valley Flood Protection Plan is a very important piece of the Flood Safe Initiative. It's a small aspect in terms of budget, but a very important one in terms of vision. This is a newly required plan by the state legislation. The Legislative Council's Digest and SB 5 that was passed by or was sponsored by Senator Machado describes the Central Valley Flood Protection Plan as a strategic flood protection plan for the Sacramento-San Joaquin Valley. There on my right is a map showing the planning area, which is essentially the Sacramento and San Joaquin River drainage basins. Now, the legislation also told us that we're to focus on the lands that currently receive protection from the state plan of flood control facilities. That green layer on the map there indicates DWR's recently developed levee flood protection zones that outlines the lands that currently receive at least some protection from the state federal system. The state federal system is essentially 1,600 miles of levees and associated facilities that were built by the federal government for which the state gave assurances to operate and maintain into the future. The 2012 version of the Central Valley Flood Protection Plan is focusing on two things. We're trying to promote understanding related to integrated flood management from state, federal, local, regional, tribal, and other perspectives, as well as looking at the various sector interests of agriculture, urban, rural, environment, environmental justice, and others. As we travel around the state and talk to folks, many people have a lot of ideas and opinions about flood management, but there are a lot of disagreements as to what's wrong, what could be improved, what needs to be done. So we see this as a big step forward if we can help promote understanding among the various perspectives. We're hoping that that leads us towards creating a broadly supported vision for how to improve integrated flood management in the Central Valley, essentially setting up a framework for implementing projects over the next several years to improve integrated flood management for the long term. While we're doing that, we're also investing heavily in developing new data and information that can be shared for many purposes. That includes considerable investigations on the current status of the levees. We're doing a lot of geotechnical analysis to better determine the degree of performance of the existing levees. We're also investing in developing new topography for the entire valley to better understand how water flows across the landscape. We're working closely with the Army Corps of Engineers to develop a new set of hydrology, flood planning hydrology, and hydraulics models so that we can evaluate new projects and determine potential impacts of changing climate. Just as an overview, the content that we expect to have in the 2012 Central Valley Flood Protection Plan is that it will describe and evaluate the performance of the state federal system in the Sacramento-San Joaquin Valley. We hope to improve understanding of flood risk and what that means. We use flood risk to mean both the likelihood of flooding or the probability of flooding combined with the negative consequences of flooding. The third item is to set the criteria and strategy for providing the urban level of flood protection, which I plan to talk to you a little bit more about this morning. As I mentioned, the 2007 legislation set a new requirement for urban level of flood protection in order to continue to approve development in a floodplain. This plan will contain the criteria for which local communities can comply with that new requirement. And the final thing on this is what I mentioned earlier. We hope to develop a plan and implementation framework that can improve system-wide flood management but can be done by local government with a state and federal partnerships over time. This is a slide to show us three of the major deliverables. We have three required plans in that 2007 legislation. The first one is the State Plan of Flood Control Descriptive Document, which for the first time will document all of the associated lands and facilities and modes of operation of what is called the State Plan of Flood Control, those 1,600 miles of federal levees that the state has given assurances for. The second one is a Flood Control System Status Report, which will give us a snapshot of current status of those State Plan of Flood Control facilities and whether they're performing according to their original design. And the third one is the one that I mentioned already, the Central Valley Flood Protection Plan. It is to be developed by DWR and turned over to the Central Valley Flood Protection Board by January 1, 2012. They then have 6 months to evaluate the plan, to hold public hearings, and they are to adopt the Central Valley Flood Protection Plan by July 1, 2012. Now, the Central Valley Flood Protection Plan is to be updated every 5 years, so the next one would be due in 2017. Now, the bottom arrow on the slide is meant to show that DWR is already investing significantly in implementation activities. We've been cost-sharing with a number of local partners to build improvements to levees and other construction projects. We expect that the implementation will continue and accelerate as we make more progress on the plan. As part of our overall development of the Central Valley Flood Protection Plan, we've hired a fairly significant consultant team, and as part of that, we've developed a broad communication and engagement platform. We've established a number of venues where we're trying to engage people that are interested in this topic and offer them multiple opportunities and different varieties of ways of getting involved. We've established forums, which are either regional or valley-wide. We've held a number of regional forums a number of months ago. We're scheduled to do a valley-wide forum on February 3rd, 2010, where we'll be sharing our first deliverable as this product. We've also established a number of work groups that have been place-based or regionally based and also topic-based. We've had 9 work groups working with us over the last 3 or 4 months to help us actually develop the content of this plan. There are also opportunities for document review at various levels. We're reaching out to interest-based groups, and we're also attempting to get out and do briefings like this one to all of our local partners throughout the Valley. The key thing I want to emphasize here is that if you're interested or if you have staff that are interested in participating in this process, there are many ways for them to get involved. We plan to develop this plan iteratively with as much public engagement as we can get. Okay. So that's an overview, again, a very quick overview of the Central Valley Flood Protection Plan and the process we're using to develop it. I want to give you a heads up on some of the new local requirements. And I should start by saying I am not an attorney.
That's a good start there.
Good. So there's a number of new requirements, and I'm only covering a few of the big ones that I think would be very important for you to be aware of. DWR is currently preparing a handbook that outlines all of the new local land use planning requirements related to flood management, and it's currently in administrative review right now. We're hoping to have that in the next few months. The first one I want to mention is there's a statewide requirement that general plan content has to be modified related to flood hazards. So, Veronica, if you could push the first one. It essentially says that if you update your housing element on or after January 1st of 2009, that you're also required to update your safety element. You're to evaluate or identify and evaluate all of the potential flood hazards and flood management opportunities in your region and to set goals and objectives for how to balance that risk. If you happen to be located within the Sacramento-San Joaquin Drainage District, which is the area of jurisdiction for the Central Valley Flood Protection Board, it requires that you consult with them during that update. Okay, the one that most people are most interested in, there's a new set of requirements that requires every city and county within the Sacramento-San Joaquin Valley to amend the general plan to include information, key information of the Central Valley Flood Protection Plan. So, for example, it mentions things like locations of flood management facilities, flood hazard zones, and approaches to manage flood risk throughout the system. This has to be done within 24 months of the adoption of the Central Valley Flood Protection Plan. It also goes on to say that after that, you must update your zoning ordinance to be consistent with the amended general plan within 12 months of your update of your general plan or within 36 months of the adoption of the Central Valley Flood Protection Plan. So if the timing, if everything stays on schedule, this would need to be done by July 1, 2015. Now, once that's done, it sets a number of requirements for development. It says once your amendments are effective, the cities and counties within the Sacramento-San Joaquin Valley can no longer enter into development agreements, issue discretionary permits or entitlements, or ministerial permits, or approve tentative or parcel maps for areas that are located within a flood hazard zone unless the city or county makes certain findings based on significant data. Now, the flood hazard zone translates to a FEMA 500-year floodplain on an official FEMA map. So I put together a flow chart to just give a high-level overview of how this works. So when a city or county is evaluating or considering the approval of a development agreement, a discretionary or ministerial permit, or a tentative or parcel map after 2015, the first question is the property located within the Sacramento-San Joaquin Valley, which I showed you the boundary of earlier. If yes, then the question is, property located within a FEMA 500-year floodplain for an NFIP map that's published in your area. If no, if either of those is no, then you use the previous process that you've been using to approve these types of permits. If the answer is yes, then there's another series of questions to ask. So the next question is the property urban or urbanizing? And the law says urban is 10,000 people or more in a developed area, and the developed area definition is consistent or is, in fact, the federal definition of a developed area. that's consistent with FEMA standards. Urbanizing says that you will have 10,000 people or more in a developed area within 10 years. So it's looking at both existing urban areas and developing urban areas. If the answer is no, if the population is less than that, then you just meet FEMA standard of flood protection, which is the current requirement, so no new requirements. If the answer is yes, then you have to answer the question, does the property have greater than or equal to 200-year level of flood protection? If yes, then you use your previous process. If no, you have a few more options. You have the option to require greater than or equal to 200-year level of flood protection as part of the development, and if you're willing to do that, then you go into your previous process. If you are not willing to require it, then you have the option to demonstrate that you or the local flood protection provider is making adequate progress toward providing greater than or equal to 200-year level of protection. And if that cannot be demonstrated, then the law says you must not approve those permits or parcel maps. The next steps in this process is that we're working on completing something called the Regional Conditions Report that the work groups and DWR staff and consultant team have been working on. As I mentioned, we'll be sharing this at a valley-wide forum in February 2010. It's actually scheduled for February 3rd in Stockton. We will be chartering our next round of work groups in the first quarter of 2010, where we'll be focusing on refining the objectives for the Central Valley Flood Protection Plan, starting to compile and evaluate potential management actions, which are the things that we can do to meet those objectives, and also forming a team to establish the criteria that are related to providing the urban standard of flood protection. So I know that's a lot of information. I'd like to stop now and see if you have any questions.
Any questions from the board? Mr. Kirby? Supervisor Chiesa?
I just want to ask, you had said something early on about 1,600 miles of the levees. Are they maintained by the federal or the state government? Because you said assurances from the state, but who's actually responsible?
Well, the federal levees were built by the federal government, and they still retain the right to approve any changes. So you can't change them without their approval. But the state is responsible for the maintenance. And in many cases, that responsibility has been delegated down to the local maintaining agencies. So it's a combination. The state's required to maintain them, but the federal government owns them.
And do we have money? Do we have enough money to maintain the levee system?
Historically, we have not. We have not had sufficient funding from the various sources to keep them up to standard. And that's why I think a lot of this effort has been begun and why a lot of the funding was provided to try and get the system back up to standard.
Okay. And on the 500-year versus 200-year floodplain versus 100-year, is that constantly being adjusted based on the levee status or when they put the levee up, they said this is going to hold a 500-year flood?
It does change. So one of the challenges of flood protection is that when you use a recurrence interval, which is like a 100-year or a 1% chance of a flood event exceeding that flow in a given year, as we learn more about the hydrology, as we experience more about the flooding, that level can change. So historically, you've seen changes in what is called a 100-year flow. The quantity of that flow can change over time. Now, the status of the levees can also affect whether FEMA rates a levee for providing 100-year level of protection. So even if the quantity hasn't changed, but the status of the levee changes, then FEMA can change the level of protection behind the levee. And in fact, that's happening a lot throughout California right now. Many of the levees are being decertified. The 200-year event is a new construct in California. No one's paid attention to the 200-year event before. It's a new state requirement. And as I mentioned, we'll be setting the criteria for how to determine what that is and how to comply with that as part of this planning process. I would like to try and get away from the frequency of change for that level of protection, and I think we have the opportunity to do that, but there's a lot of conversations to be had. The 500-year event, which is also something that FEMA does, it's also subject to that same level of change based on changing hydrology. We expect as climate change continues to change the way that precipitation falls in California, that these levels of protection will in fact change over time.
Supervisor Muntean.
Where's the Corps of Army Engineers come in, from federal?
Yes, the Army Corps of Engineers is the primary federal flood protection provider. They are, in fact, the owners of the federal levees that we were talking about, the 1,600 miles of levees. We work very closely with them both on planning for improvements, and we're also doing everything we can to get them to invest in improvements for...
The reason I asked that, a number of years ago when we were having floods on the San Joaquin River, and we were involved in that discussion, and we were concerned about if we had additional rains, we would have another flood. And one of the issues that we were discussing was that the Corps was going to replace the levees to where they originally were, but our problem was that they would not change the depth of the channels, so replacing them to the same level was of no consequence. Has that ever been resolved?
Well, you're starting to get into some of the real challenges that we're facing in terms of planning.
And that was due primarily to the environmental laws that prevented that from being done. I had a long discussion with
them. Yeah, there are many constraints on changing the system.
Yeah.
Not the least of which is enough money to change everything in the system. But this is something that we're looking at as part of the Central Valley Flood Protection.
So that's an ongoing process that hasn't been resolved, is what you're really saying.
That's right.
Thank you.
Mr. Kirby, you said that at a certain time, it's not in your the material that I've got, that we have to consider the floodplains before we go into development agreements with anybody. But, you know, LAFCO makes the final determination upon annexations. Is this a requirement that LAFCO is going to have to start looking at?
Whoever has the ability to make those approvals for the things that I listed has to look at it. The law is written directly towards the cities and counties, which is my understanding is they're the ones that actually make the determination and issue the permits or issue the maps to write the general plans. But any land use planning entity or regional organization like you're talking about needs to be looking at this requirement.
Mm-hmm. Richard, I've got one whole town that the city of Newman, that the entire city is in a floodplain.
We've been trying for
15 years to build a flood control project out there. And I think, I don't know how many millions we've spent on planning already, probably $4 or $5 million, and we can't, they have a hard time getting anything done. It's turned into a jobs program for attorneys, consultants, and the Corps of Engineers. And we've just spent millions of dollars on this and haven't got anything accomplished, these concrete things that I can point to. And, you know, if we're really going to be serious about building flood control projects, we've got to cut some of the red tape and some of the requirements that we study everything to depth. We spend a decade or more on studying it and never been, spend millions of dollars and never build anything. I know that's the problem in that town, and it's if this law goes into effect, which is, I don't know what date this does, they'll never build anything in Newman again because they haven't been able to build the flood control project that they've been working on for the past 15 years.
I understand. I've heard similar complaints around the state.
Well, I've been involved in this directly. I made numerous trips to Sacramento. I've been Supervisor Grover to Washington, D.C. to try and get money for this project. And the problem is you got to study this, and then you got to study that, and you got to study all these alternatives, and then you got to look at all the different species. And it's just, 10 years goes by and $5 million, and you still haven't built the project. And it's something like this type of regulation will completely stop any building anything in Newman or in other places that can flood because of creeks or rivers.
I understand. Our orders from DWR are to try and help make progress towards providing that protection. So that's why we're here talking to you, to invite you to come and participate in our process, see if we can help cut down some of that red tape. Can't make any promises, but we're trying. I do want to clarify, it's not if this law comes into effect. It has already been passed and signed, so it is in effect.
And when does it take effect, and what year?
Takes place. The first requirement for the general plan amendment is within 24 months of the adoption of the Central Valley Flood Protection Plan, which if the Central Valley Flood Protection Plan is adopted when it's supposed to, that your requirement then would be in place July 1, 2014. The zoning ordinance has to be amended within a year after that, so after July 1, 2015, this restriction would come into effect.
Okay. The Cal LAFCO met a couple of weeks ago, and this never did come up. About everything else did, but not this. So this is something we'll have to look into.
Well, that's why we're out talking to folks. We understand that this isn't really on the radar screen for a lot of the local land use planning entities yet. That's why we're out just letting you know that it's there.
Any further questions from the board? Okay, thank you, Mr. Kirby.
Thank you. I'd like to introduce Scott Woodland. He's DWR's regional coordinator for this area.
Good morning. I'm sorry I came in late and Ken wasn't able to introduce me to begin with. I've been given the assignment within DWR to work with the counties along the lower San Joaquin River and the cities and help them get a better understanding of what DWR is doing and how we're trying to help. And in particular, Supervisor DeMartini, I would be interested in talking with the people from either with you or people from the city of Newman about what some of the things you've planned. As Ken indicated, this is not the first time we've heard about local municipalities or even reclamation districts putting together plans that seem to have gone nowhere, and DWR is very interested in trying to help move some of those plans forward, both as part of the CVFPP and outside of that as things that can happen ahead of time. And so I would like to make myself available to the board and to the cities within the county.
Okay, I'd like to talk to you. I think myself and our public works director has been working on this project. It seems like forever with no resolution to it.
I'd be glad to do that, and I can leave my contact information with your clerk.
Just leave it with the clerk of the board.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay, thank you for your presentation. Not a voting item. We will now move on to public comment period. This is the time at our meeting when members of the public can address this board on any non-agenda item. I have one request to speak from Flora Carter. I don't know if she's still here. Okay. See that? Anybody who would like to address this board on a non-agenda item who has not filled out a slip? Okay. Seeing none, we'll move to the consent calendar. Did any member of this board wish to pull an item from the consent calendar?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I'd like to pull A3F and B2.
Okay, we will pull item A3F and B2 for a separate vote. Anybody else wish to pull an item? Okay, seeing none, I'll entertain a motion for the remainder of the consent calendar. A motion's been made by Supervisor Monteith and Supervisor Grover to approve the remaining items on our consent calendar. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed? The motion passes 5-0. Okay, we will now move to agenda item A3F.
Mr. Chairman, I just have an amendment to that. I spoke with Mr. Runyon yesterday. And he withdrew his name, so I would like to amend that to be Mark Schwartz from Denair as appointment to the Denair Municipal Advisory Council. I make that motion.
Okay, Mr. Chiesa, motion's been made. Does anybody want to second that?
Second.
Okay, motion's been made by Supervisor Chiesa, seconded by Supervisor O'Brien. Any further discussion from the board? Okay. Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed? Okay, motion is carried. Put Mark Schwartz in that position. And you also pulled item B2.
B2, yeah.
The staff report on that?
There's going to be a staff report, and we also have four members of the Keys Community Service District out here in the audience if we have any questions. But I just wanted Raul to go over, again, quickly for the listening audience, as to just a little bit of background on this issue.
Right. Thank you, Supervisor Chiesa, Mr. Chairman, members of the board, CEO Robinson, County Council Boring, Raul Mendez with the Chief Executive Office, Senior Management Consultant. The item before you this morning is for you to essentially consider the use of community development funds to assist the Keys Community Service District with sustaining their streetlight program. There are three recommendations before you this morning, the first of which is to approve the use of $42,000 from the Community Development Fund to assist the Keys Community Service District with their plan to sustain their streetlight program. The second recommendation is to authorize the Chief Executive Officer to execute an agreement with the Community Service District for the receipt of these funds. Lastly, to direct the auditor controller to establish the budget as is necessary. As a way of background, the Keys Community Service District was formed back in June 20th, 1955. The Community Service District is an independent special district from the county, from Santos County, that provides currently street lighting, water for domestic and commercial use, and sewage disposal. In the late 1950s, the lighting district consisted of 49 lights. The assessment at that time was $8 per year. Bringing you to the present, there are currently 176 streetlights within the district. The annual assessment is currently $10 per year. There are a total of 1,125 parcels within the district. Some estimates provided by the Keys Community Service District, total annual utility costs, which are paid to TID, are approximately $20,000, a little over $20,000. The total annual maintenance costs are approximately $5,000. Important to note that the district does own some light poles within the specified district, and then also TID owns some poles. The district from Keys does incur some maintenance costs for the maintenance of their own poles. It's fairly obvious to see the disparity in the program. Obviously, expenditures exceed the revenues coming in through the annual assessments. The Keys Community Service District Board recently obviously made a determination that there was an immediate need to correct a deficiency in the program, and hence contacted Santos County to assist with that process. The Keys Community Service District in recent meetings has taken affirmative steps to try and address this issue with the program. Part of this plan was addressed here today. I wanted to highlight some of the key components of the plan or their strategy for moving forward with addressing the issues with this program. The first of which is the $42,000. Essentially what that would be used for, it would be used for to pay for 18 months of utility costs and also to assist the district with moving forward with the preparation of a Proposition 218 assessment ballot procedure, which obviously would also include some costs, both the engineer's report, preparation of an engineer's report, and some legal costs associated with those proceedings. The district is prepared to absorb approximately $17,000 in costs associated with that process. The deliverables, as mentioned, will include and will be written into the project funding agreement. County will receive the engineer's report. There will be obviously some discussion regarding the level of service that's currently provided and what is an acceptable level of service for the community. There is also plans to conduct a community outreach program to make sure that residents in Keys know exactly what the annual assessment is comprised of and what level of service will be provided. Some of the other things that the Community Service District is looking into is essentially the collection of assessments through the county tax roll. Because the Community Service District is a small district, it has had some difficulty with collections in the past. Delinquencies have become a problem, and the thought is that working with the county is something that can hopefully be mitigated. The other thing that the district is also looking to do is improve their accounting controls and their budget practices to make sure that moving forward the program is carefully monitored so that expenses and revenues are closely looked at. As mentioned previously, there is going to be a project funding agreement that will be prepared between the Council of County and the Keys Community Service District. This project funding agreement will be modeled after the funding agreements that are in place for some of our economic development bank programs and projects. Community development funds. This board has approved the use of community development funds for a variety of different purposes. There are, I believe, 6 different projects that have been funded. Some of those include the countywide growth management strategy, some assistance to formation of a lighting district, another to assist with the formation of a county service area. But essentially, the purpose of the fund, the goal of the fund is to provide support for one-time projects, programs benefiting the unincorporated areas that demonstrate strong local support and a commitment and a general public benefit. And it's obvious that the Keys Lighting District maintaining lights in the community of Keys is consistent with this goal, as is it is also consistent with the county's recent efforts in the area. You all know of the Keys Improvement Project that is currently underway in that community. This obviously would complement those improvements. To summarize, again, these are the staff recommendations before you this morning. I am available to answer any questions that you may have. We also have several members from the Keys Community Service District here that are also willing to and ready to answer any questions you may have. At this point, I'd like to turn it back to you, to the chairman.
Hey, thank you, Mr. Mendez. It wasn't the Keys District that got a grant from our community development for sidewalks recently?
It wasn't the community service district itself. I think the program that you're talking about is an incentive program for residents that are currently living within the project area defined by the Keys Improvement Program project. The goal there is to assist property owners with installing their own sidewalks. The incentive is that the county, through the program, would cover the cost of the permit that's required to be pulled. Obviously, the property owner would be required to pay for the actual improvements themselves. But that was to model that program after a program programs that have been instituted in other communities in past projects. So although the community of Keys is obviously the community that's benefiting, if not the community service district specifically.
I see. If I understand your presentation properly, they have $11,000 in income and $25,000 in expenses. And how could a community service district or any district be that far out of balance there without them realizing it? I mean, this is something they should have taken care of on their own without coming to the county to bail them out after they're running deficit after deficit. I would think that when you've got $11,000 in income and $25,000 in expenses, it should have been taken care of years ago.
Yeah, and that is undoubtedly an accurate statement. In our involvement with the Keys Community Service District, our real focus has been on addressing their need and their issue prospectively, rather than going back and trying to understand what they did wrong, putting into place with their cooperation and support a program that would allow them to do the right things moving forward. Community Development Fund is really designed for this type of a use. It's anticipated that throughout the unincorporated communities in Stanislaus County, and we have any number of them throughout the county, that there are occasionally needs that are short-term in nature and then result in long-term benefits to the community itself. Without looking at what went wrong in the past, what we're trying to do is look at what can be done in collaboration with the local community to improve their quality of life and to develop a program that will both be sustainable and affordable to the community itself. This is not a handout, it's a hand up. And we have done our best to tailor and develop the community development fund in such a way that it encourages independence, but it provides an opportunity or a stepladder to move to the next level to be able to succeed, where otherwise the district would undoubtedly be forced to simply shut off all the lights and go home. While I think we would all acknowledge that there have been some challenges at the Keys Community Support CSD, that we also see opportunities because we have a caring community that is fully engaged in this process, recognizes what went wrong, and steps necessary to right that ship and to, in fact, develop a program that meets the needs of the community that it's charged to serve.
Supervisor Chiesa. A little bit of background. You know, there was an election, Supervisor DeMartini, that failed, but they thought it passed. And when they raised their assessment, they needed 66%, and they got 55%. And I think that was mentioned in the staff report, but the public doesn't know it. So they were taking steps to try and increase. It was I like to think of it as a mistake. And I know we've had our discussions with the Keys Community Service District. I was disappointed that, much like yourself, that they were behind. But as CEO Robinson stated, there's a lot of good things going on in Keys. Turning out the lights right now would not be a step in the right direction. It is a safety issue. This is a bridge loan. They do understand the magnitude of the situation right now. It will be up to Raul and myself to make sure that they continue to understand. But I think the steps are going in the right direction to hold an election. If their election is not successful, then we're going to have to go back to the drawing board. I know this is a one-time bridging loan to get them where they need to be. But let's keep the community stepping in the right direction, and it'll be a huge education component, of which I'll be more than happy to help out myself. But I think this is necessary, although the responsibility still will fall on the Keys Community Service District to make sure this is implemented correctly with oversight from the county. So,
and Supervisor Chiesa, I don't see anything in this report that calls it a loan.
It's
with a different. I have to disagree with our CEO. This is a handout.
That was a Freudian.
This isn't a handout. This isn't a loan. It is a flat-out giveaway for a district that hasn't taken care of its own financial needs. Supervisor Grover.
We inherited a somewhat similar situation back in 2003. That was both a lighting district and a landscape maintenance district. And the problem was that the county had never paid attention and told the folks that they were in arrears and had inadequate revenue. So we shut off the lights and quit doing the maintenance and then started a campaign. It seems to me you've made a decision here to use the funds that Supervisor Chiesa has available to direct as he sees fit, and he chose to do this here. But it seems to me like the keyest element of your campaign is that if you the folks that live in this district don't approve this, the lights will go out and there won't be any other opportunity to come back without voting to do it yourself. That's the whole point of the lighting districts, is that those folks have to pay their own way. So I think with that proviso, I don't have any problem with Supervisor Chiesa deciding to do this, but it should be the last resort that we have before they step up and pay what they need to.
Any further discussion? Okay, I'm going to go ahead and go along with it this time, but it's going to be the only time, and if that community can't raise the assessment enough to cover its cost, going to have some dark streets out there, because this is $42,000 that could have went to real projects.
Yeah, and I will indicate that is the express intent, to give the communities an opportunity to succeed, not to be a handout on an ongoing basis to that community, but just to give them that bridge that will give them the opportunity to be self-sustaining and to control their own destiny. This doesn't guarantee them success. It provides them an opportunity for it.
Okay, with that, I'll make a motion to accept the three recommendations.
Is there a second?
Second.
Okay, motion's been made by Supervisor Chiesa and seconded by Supervisor Grover. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed? Motion carried 5-0. Okay. We will now move to our 9:15 scheduled matter concerning the formation of a Marshall Avenue Lighting District.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, Supervisors, Mr. Robinson, Mr. Doring. I'm Matt Machado, Director of Public Works for the county, and with me this morning is Denny Ferreira of our Engineering Division, who manages our special districts. This morning, in front of you, we have a public hearing to consider the formation of the Marshall Avenue Lighting District. And at that, I'll turn it over to Denny for a brief staff report.
Good morning, Chairman DeMartini, Board of Supervisors, CEO Robinson, Council Doring. My name is Denny Frere. I'm with Stanislaus County Department of Public Works. As just stated, this is a public hearing regarding the Marshall Avenue Lighting District. The Marshall Avenue Lighting District is being formed per request from parcel owners of Marshall Avenue and the Office of Supervisor Jeff Grover. And at this time, I'd like to personally thank Supervisor Jeff Grover and Field Representative Sandy Hopp for their active and diligent participation in this formation. This required ballot procedure for the Marshall Avenue Lighting District is a complete compliance with the procedures of the Constitution of the State of California, and more specifically, Proposition 218. The deadline to change the ballot is at the end of this public hearing, and if there's any parcel owners listed within the engineer's report that are here today and would like to submit or change a ballot, please proceed immediately to the table in the back, and a Public Works representative will assist you. At this time, I ask the board if they have any questions in regards to this formation. And if not, I ask Chairman DeMartini to open up the public hearing.
Before we go to the public hearing, does any member of the board have any questions of staff? Okay, seeing none, we'll open the public hearing. Anyone who wishes to speak on this item, please come to the podium, state your name for the record. Okay, seeing no one, we will close public hearing, bring it back to the board for action. I suppose you need a little time to count the ballots. Okay, I think not knowing how many ballots there are, I think we'll just go on to the next item and then come back to this when you have the results of the election.
Thank you.
Fitting that we have this election today on Election Day. Doesn't usually happen. Okay, you want to make your comments now?
No, go ahead. You got the next group up.
Okay, we'll now move to agenda item B6, first quarter financial report.
This is CEO staff is preparing to present to you the first quarter budget report. I do want to make some opening remarks. First, I would say that we have significant surprises in our first quarter report to you. And as you reviewed the staff report and financial information that were presented with the agenda item, you would have noted that we are essentially on track as we had anticipated we will be. I will note, however, that it is too early in the fiscal year to identify whether we will have difficulty collecting our revenue based on revenue trends which are insufficient to be able to determine what our annual collections are going to be. The two most serious areas of risk are in our Prop 172 public safety tax and our locally generated and collected sales tax. And we will, as we complete a couple quarters, have a better feel for what our discretionary revenue collections will be for the 2009-10 fiscal year. I also indicate that we are still anticipating a significant 2010-11 deficit, something in excess of $10 million, even after adding the $8 million that the board has allocated to cover the anticipated shortfall, and assuming that we have some mitigation of the overall expected impact of our retirement contribution in the 2010-11 fiscal year. We do have departments already beginning work that will be required to identify next level budget reductions. Some are very actively involved in developing budget strategies that we may be bringing to you in the next couple of months to begin to address anticipated 2010-11 budget reductions, and we may even be asking for you to provide us an opportunity for a head start on those 10-11 reductions by implementing prior to the end of this current fiscal year. With that, I will ask staff to proceed.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the board, Mr. Robinson, Mr. Doring, Patty Hill-Thomas, Chief Executive Office. As a part of our regular fiscal reporting team in the community, your budget report today and the recommendations are all focused on your board's priorities again. Our first quarter report is organized as such as well. Our regular fiscal reporting is an important part of our stability and maintaining a balanced budget and responding to the leadership from your board to be sure that the county is in a strong and healthy fiscal position. This is our first quarter report. In February, we'll be back here for our mid-year report, and at the third quarter in May of 2010, all the while, as Mr. Robinson said, working on the coming year's budget. Our goals in this level of analysis is to be sure that we're quite aware and quite on top of the county's fiscal performance. And while we focused in today's report on the first 3 months, we're really looking back and looking forward a couple of years. We identify, with the help of our department heads, the outstanding budget issues and make adjustments and recommend adjustments to your board. Ironically, the biggest adjustment at the first quarter is an increase in funds for social service programs, and the biggest reduction is a decrease in state funding for public health programs. And I just make that point to highlight the importance of the county's snow backfill policy, because the county is an agent of the state and federal government, and as such responsive to those needs and changes that both the state legislature, the governor, and the federal government make. At this point, we wanted to show you a picture because we think it's confusing to the public and to the community why we talk about increasing our budget in the first quarter for social service programs while there was so much discussion this summer and early this fall about cuts in social service programs. There's no question that there have been reductions at the state level, and this chart is not intended to confuse you, but rather to show you the relationship of funds that come into our community services agency, which is the largest department in our county budget. If you look at the violet colored, you can see from where we were at final budget 2008-09 to where we are today in the first quarter of 9-10, the federal and state funds have actually increased from $230 million to $259 million, and that's why we're asking to increase the budget. If you look at the next line, that's the realignment, that sort of purple color, you can see that realignment has dropped when you look at the numbers from $15.7 million to $12.7 million. Realignment is an important funding source that comes to the state for both social services and health programs, and it, like sales tax and other general revenues, has seen a dramatic decline. You can see the county's general fund portion. It's the first sort of yellow piece that has maintained from 7.2 to 7.9 million. That $7.9 million is actually a reduction of 12% from the previous fiscal year, not shown on this chart. And finally, the line across the top, I'd like to draw your attention to the column that's marked Proposed Budget 2009-10. At the point of the proposed budget, because we needed to reduce our county obligation to social services programs, we believed there would be $8.8 million in state and federal funding that we could not achieve. As you can see in the first quarter, we're still not able to receive $1.2 million of those allocations because our general fund contribution has been reduced. That's a result of our across-the-board reductions of 12% to all non-safety programs. What's important about this story is that primarily federal funds in the way of stimulus money have come in, some on a one-time basis, into social service programs, and some state funds that really reflect the increased demand for aid and social services programs. So I hope we are trying and somewhat successful in you in trying to unconfuse the fact that, yes, there are cuts statewide to social service programs. There are dramatic increases in the need for services in Stanislaus County, and the combination of state and federal money is really resulting in an increase in our budget. And that, members of the board, is the largest change that we're recommending today. With that, I'd like to turn it over to Monica Nino.
Good morning, Chairman, members of the board, Mr. Robinson, Mr. Doring. I'm Monica Nino from the Chief Executive Office. Overall, for first quarter, there were limited requests for adjustments from departments. Total recommendations total over $8.2 million. And as Ms. Hill-Thomas said, those are primarily in our Community Services Agency. And we are recommending estimated revenue increases of over $8 million and the use of additional fund balance of approximately $183,000. There were no requests for additional funding for the general fund. The majority of the adjustments recommended are in the Community Services Agency, which is an increase, and for our Health Services Agency in our public health programs, a reduction as a result of the state and federal funding. Another major increase is in our risk management self-insurance funds for general liability. The following table illustrates a five-year summary of discretionary revenue. As of first quarter, actual discretionary revenue was $6.6 million compared to $8.5 million for the same period 1 year ago. This amount represents 4.3% of the 2009-2010 final budget. Typically, discretionary revenue for the last 3 years have ranged from 4.3% to 5.3% of the total amount received. The apportionment of secured property taxes should be determined by December, and revised estimates for property tax revenue will be evaluated at that time. At the beginning of the current fiscal year, legislation was enacted providing the state to borrow 8% of local property tax revenue as part of Proposition 1A. The first installment of the 1A loan, which impacts local county property tax revenue, will be completed by the end of the calendar year of 2009. This total transfer amount for this current fiscal year is estimated at $7.9 million. There was a designation that was approved by this board as part of the final budget that offsets this exposure in the current fiscal year. Revenue from sales and use tax is continuing to decline due to the cautious exhibited by the average consumer. By the end of the calendar year, we're anticipating the results and the receipts of the Cash for Clunkers program and will be recorded as a modest boost to the lagging sales tax revenues is anticipated. Notification of the new pool rate for our Proposition 172 public safety sales tax revenue is usually received during mid-November or later. Undoubtedly, we're anticipating a reduction in this area. Because of the uncertain economic conditions, a close watch will be kept of discretionary revenue through the year, and any changes will be recommended as necessary as part of the mid-year fiscal review, which will be before this board in February of 2010. The following pie chart illustrates the final budget that was approved by this board in September of this fiscal year. It totaled over $958 million, a decrease of approximately 1% from last year's final budget, which was adopted at $966 million. The largest portion of the county budget was approved as part of a healthy community. That totals over $466 million, or approximately 48.7%. Those departments, the three largest departments in that area, is our Community Services Agency, our Health Services Agency, and Behavioral Health and Recovery Services. The largest general fund obligation in the county budget is primarily in our Safe Community area. That portion of the budget, as part of the final, was approved at over $157 million, or 16.5% of the final budget. That includes our Sheriff's Department, both operations and detention, District Attorney, probation, public defender, and animal services. To date, the county has experienced a decline in discretionary revenue of over $14.9 million from last fiscal year. All general operations department plus animal services received a 12% reduction in their respective net county cost. Public safety departments received a 5% reduction in their net county cost. The following table illustrates the recommended first quarter adjustments totaling approximately $8.2 million. Within the SAFE community, we are recommending a reduction of over $268,000. This reduction is primarily in our probation department. For a healthy community, this is a net amount of $7.3 million. This is primarily an increase in our community services agency. For a strong agricultural economy and heritage, we are recommending an increase of over $16,000 for the Ag Commissioner as a result of additional revenue in contracts and inspections. For efficient delivery of public services, we are recommending an increase of $1.1 million in our general liability budget for a total recommendation as of first quarter of $8.2 million, bringing our adjusted budget at first quarter to over $966 million. Nancy Bronstein will now share with you greater detail within our various first quarter adjustments. Thank you.
In the priority area of a safe community, an overall decrease in appropriations of over $268,000 is recommended. In the district attorney's office, an increase of $28,000 is recommended in order to transfer funds within various grant programs in the areas of elder abuse advocacy and victim services to eliminate deficit fund balances. A decrease of over $297,000 is recommended for probation field services. The department is requesting to delete revenue, appropriations, and positions associated with the Substance Abuse and Crime Prevention Act, more commonly known as Proposition 36, as a result of the loss of funding for this program. It is also recommended that the Auditor Controller and the Chief Executive Officer be given authority to process future department requests for probation to transfer appropriations among the three budget units of administration, field services, and institutional services. The probation and institutional services budget is experiencing higher than anticipated expenditures due to consistently high populations at juvenile hall. The ability to transfer appropriation between budgets will allow the department to maintain a balanced budget without requesting additional appropriations for institutional services. In the priority area of a healthy community, a $7.3 million increase is recommended. There is an overall increase of $8.7 million in appropriations and estimated revenue at the Community Services Agency, primarily as a result of the agency receiving final state and federal allocations. This includes $7.5 million in final allocations for fiscal year 2009-2010, augmented with $1.2 million in funds newly appropriated at first quarter. The majority of the increase is in StanWorks program allocations, including CalWORKs, Medi-Cal, and Child Care Stage 1. As a result of the elimination or decrease in state funds for public health as a result of the state budget crisis, a revised estimate for federal funding for Medi-Cal administration, it is recommended to decrease appropriations at the Health Services Agency Public Health by $1.4 million. These reductions are primarily in the areas of maternal, child, and adolescent health, adolescent family life, and HIV/AIDS programs. An increase in appropriations of $16,342 is recommended for the priority area of a strong agricultural economy and heritage. This increase is the result of the Agricultural Commissioner receiving the final state and federal contract allocations related to pesticide use, storage of agricultural crops, and inspections. An increase in appropriations of close to $1.2 million is recommended for the priority area of efficient delivery of public services. This increase is for the Chief Executive Office Risk Management Self-Insurance Fund for General Liability. After reviewing open and potential claims against the county, the appropriations increase is recommended to fund potential costs in the General Liability Self-Insurance Fund. The increase in appropriations will be offset by over $1 million increase in estimated revenue and $162,646 in retained earnings. Total authorized positions with the approval of the final budget were 3,990. Recommendations in this report include unfunding 9 positions in behavioral health and recovery services, unfunding 1 position in the Community Services Agency, and an overall decrease of 15 positions in the Health Services Agency, including 3 reductions in force. With the approval of these changes, there will be 3,965 full-time authorized positions. This chart shows the decrease in full-time authorized positions since the first quarter of fiscal year 2007-2008. The overall decrease in full-time authorized positions from first quarter 2007-2008 to first quarter 2009-2010 is 639 positions. Ms. Hill-Thomas will now cover the next slide.
We continue to look ahead to keep a focus on where we're going structurally. We have an imbalance in our general fund between expenditures and revenues, and our three-year strategy approved by your board allowed the use of some reserves as we structurally reduced our level of expenditures. We are currently, as Mr. Robinson stated earlier, working on solutions and a strategy that we can eliminate not only the expected shortfall in revenue, but our reliance on those one-time funds starting in the year 2010-2011. We are very conscious that there are 2 years remaining on that three-year plan, and our goal is to reduce and beat that time period in order to minimize our fiscal exposure. And those strategies really need to be different to recognize the variety of different funding sources that fund county programs. We are remaining quite concerned, as we know your board is, in retirement cost exposure. While the Retirement Association took action to mitigate the retirement increases for the year we're in, 2009-2010, an even larger exposure remains for next year due to the losses and significant investment losses in the fund. Our concern and our goal is to continue to work with the Retirement Association to minimize those costs for county services in the coming year. And we've already talked to you a little bit today about general liability, but our ability to use retained earnings in our self-insurance funds will be decreasing as those costs continue to rise. There is a level of uncertainty that continues. The story is not new, but we're very focused on the uncertainty and the imbalance in the state budget. We're really starting to see in each budget report more and more specific state budget actions being implemented at the county level. Our flat property tax growth, decrease in sales tax, tremendous concern about the Prop 72 public safety sales tax reductions, and overall decreases in departmental revenues are areas to be concerned. As our strategy emerges, our goal is to make a long-term approach that recognizes the realities of the revenues that will be available now and in the future for county government and focusing on your board's priorities. It is our conclusion that we will continue to need to rebase and restructure the organization. We will recommend that the board maintain the no backfill policy and look for permanent structural change as we move forward. This slide shows you our budget schedule. It is a year-round activity, and you can see that at the end of May 2010, we expect to have the proposed budget for next fiscal year available to the public, with the budget hearings in the week of June 8th through 10th for the proposed budget, and suggesting budget hearings the week of September 14th through 16th for the county's final budget for next fiscal year. Mr. Chairman and members of the board, we have five recommendations before you today. One is to accept the CEO's first quarter report, authorize the executive officer and the auditor controller to make the necessary adjustments. I want to be more clear and clarify recommendation number three. It is our recommendation that your board amend the salary and position allocation resolution to reflect the recommendations included as a part of the first quarter report to be effective with the start of the pay period beginning November 7, 2009. Recommendation number four is to approve the reduction in force of three positions which are filled at our Health Services Agency public health budget effective January 2, 2010. And to finally approve contracts and agreements that are listed in your written budget, agenda packet attachment B that are in the cumulative amounts of greater than $100,000 since the summer of 2003. Our last slide is shows how to get to the first quarter report as well as the county budget on the county's website, www.stancounty.com. And I'd like to take a moment to thank the department heads, their teams, and the CEO's budget team for the continued focus and work on the county's budget. And we'd be happy to answer any questions you may have.
There are questions for staff.
I would like to comment that we have had suggestions that characterizes budget reduction suggestions coming from some of the departments that our regular quarterly reports are unnecessary. I think they're more critical now than they ever have been as we work through the next 3 years and try to be proactive and not reactive to changes in the economy, changes in the environment, and changes in local, state, and federal expectations of county government.
Well, I think they are, too. You have to go over this every quarter because, you know, to keep track of, you know, what the sales tax is. And one of the things you didn't touch on was retirement costs, which are bound to be going up because of our market losses and flawed assumptions that we operated under the last few years. And that's certainly going to have a negative impact on the county as we have to increase those costs. Along with the property tax decline and the series of lawsuits that we've had, it just puts a lot of pressure on all the departments. Further comments from the board? You may be getting off easy today. No comments? Is there a motion we accept the report?
I move the staff recommendations.
Second it.
And motion's been made by Supervisor Grover and seconded by Supervisor Monteith to accept the staff recommendations. All those in favor?
Aye.
Signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Motion's carried 5-0.
Thank you.
We will now return to our 9:15 public hearing to get the election results.
The ballot passed by a majority of the landowners in support of the formation of the Marshall Avenue Lighting District and the proposed method of calculating the annual assessment. The weighted votes were in support 13.51, in protest 2, and we had one incomplete ballot.
That passes easily. Supervisor Grover.
I assume we're going to need to have a motion to ratify this at some point.
Yes, we will.
Okay. unfortunately, she wasn't able to be here today, but we received a call. It's probably been 5 months ago now from a person that's a landowner on this Marshall Avenue and lived there, and she let us know that she was now on a fixed income. She had been paying for the only light on the street, an MID street light, for the last 7 or 8 years. And since she was on a fixed income, she wasn't going to do that anymore. And by the way, what was I going to do about it? But after I got over my initial response to that, I got to thinking, what could we do about it? And we started looking into it, found out that the 34 properties on the street, the majority were owner occupied. So we kind of went through a process of phone calls to every landowner that we knew about, mailing. We didn't get through to all of them, but we got through to most of them. Maddie joined us on a Saturday morning, and we walked and knocked on every door of the landowners that lived there, and ended up with 20 landowners signing the ballot of the 34 landowners, which gave a pretty clear indication that there was going to be some support for it, and went through the process. The reason I brought it up is I think this is completely reproducible all over the county for pocket areas and for areas that have urbanized that are in our jurisdiction that don't have street lights. And what I could recommend is that you pick a single street or a couple of streets, and then we can add to these districts as additional streets would choose to vote themselves in. The reason we were able to do this was a short street, 34 parcels, 5 lights is what they're going to get. The requirement was that they pay $3,300 up front or they can't get off the ground, which would kill every single deal, I think, that you ever come across. And what I was so appreciative of, the fact that we have these community development funds that we have allocated, by using those for the $3,300 up front, They can immediately, and I'll ask Matt or somebody to tell us how soon we think those lights will be in, and go ahead and put you on the hot spot here. But by using that, we were able to follow through, and these folks will end up paying $3 a month or something like that, but they'll have street lights. And in the period of time, which, back to the original question, what are you going to do about it? When you're thinking of the fact that many of these folks were first-time home buyers and had just went through a dramatic reduction of the value of their property, so that's number one thing. The second thing is, I don't know if any of us have ever lived in an urban street in a tough part of town that don't have lights, but it's like extra dark when you're over there. And now for the first time, they're going to have something that, in the period of time when we're going to have to cut law enforcement, we're going to have to cut personnel, they're going to have the increased unification of being able to see one another and see what's on their street and have a safer environment than they had before. So if any of you would like to walk through the process, we'll make ourselves available for that along with the staff that it pertains to. And I'm even available to knock on doors and help get on this thing because it really is going to be a satisfying thing, I think, for those folks to have light on their street for the first time. Matt.
Yeah. Just to answer the question, about 4 to 6 weeks for MID to energize those new lights.
Okay, so our target is to have lights by Christmas.
Right.
Can we work on that?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay. Good deal. All right. And with that, I'll make the motion to approve this lighting district.
Is there a second?
Second.
The motion has been made by Supervisor Grover and seconded by Supervisor O'Brien to approve the lighting district. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed? Motion's carried 5-0.
Thank you.
We will now move to correspondence.
This board has received from the State Fish and Game Commission a notice of finding regarding the American pika.
Referred to the Fish and Wildlife Committee.
This board has received a letter from the California Emergency Management Agency regarding the designation of Stanislaus County and contiguous counties as disaster areas by the U.S. Small Business Administration as a result of the economic impacts caused by the Modesto office complex fire that occurred on August 2, 2009.
Refer to the Chief Executive Office, Office of Emergency Services, and the Stanislaus Economic Development Workforce Alliance.
This board has received the claims as noted on the agenda.
Acknowledge receipt of claims and refer to the Chief Executive Office, Risk Management Division. Are there any Board of Supervisors reports? And I would just like to say that I remember today is Election Day, and we have elections throughout the county, except for Patterson, where there are no elections. So remember to get out there and vote, and I will be watching the polls tonight for the board, be the election observer. Legislative and Fiscal Management Report, Mr. Robinson.
Yes, just a couple items this morning. The first is to let you know that on the federal level, Safety Lou, a continuing resolution was passed by the House and Senate, extending the existing Safety Lou through December 18th, 2009. The feds continue to limp along month over month, but keeping the current funding alive. On the state side, as Mr. Jones says, water everywhere. And I think that's a good indicator of what's happening in Sacramento. Discussions are focused almost exclusively on water issues, and several legislators have stepped up, most notably Senator Cogdill and Senator Steinberg, moving legislation through in an effort to address a number of water issues that have been identified by the governor and his administration, as well as numerous legislators, as critical to the future needs of the state. So no specific news on that now, just lots and lots of activity. That's all I have.
There being no further business, this meeting is adjourned.